movies. Time to talk about movies. It's time to talk about movies. Oh yeah.
Criticism. Highlights. Dumb bits.
All of that. all included.
It's all here.
It is all here. How's it going, Dean?
Ugh. It's been so long since we posted a podcast.
It's been about a week since we posted. Ugh.
So I've been yearning for more podcast from us.
I mean, I think the listeners have been as well. I think that 7 days is almost too much to ask them to wait.
Let's be honest, though. I don't do this for the listeners.
Yeah, that's true. I do it to listen to your own voice.
I do this just to listen to myself.
At this point, we might be the only ones listening to this, so.
It's hard to say. I don't know. Based on the iTunes reviews, I'd say we've got one person listening.
At least, no, I think we have like three now.
What?
Yeah. Which is pretty good. I mean, that's one more than the years that this has been available on iTunes. So that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
We're gaining.
I mean, incidentally, if anybody did listen to this on iTunes and wanted to review it.
Oh, sure.
I would very much encourage that.
We wouldn't say no.
Definitely not.
We wouldn't say no to a review.
Definitely not.
Yeah, but it's so, and it's real meta. To review a movie review podcast.
That is, yeah. Because would they be reviewing us or reviewing our reviews or trying to add their own review of the review? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or not of the review, but of the whatever we're talking
yeah,
about.
I get it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want them to do that. I wouldn't want them to go on and just say, hey. Well I guess if they like the movie a lot.
If they just go on and they review it, it's all good for us.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
there's no negative...
True.
Repercussions.
It increases our exposure.
Yeah.
And they don't even have to write anything. They can just click the stars. That's almost enough.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, just click 5 stars.
That's
all they have to
do. The more the better. Yeah.
Yeah. We'd give them 10 if they had that ability.
A 5's like a 10.
Yeah.
If it were 10. So.
Absolutely.
It works out the same.
Oh, it's so great. I love the iTunes reviews.
Yeah, we have to actually start this one with an apology.
Talk about the elephant in the room.
Okay, let's do that.
It's giant. It's leathery. Mm. It's dried out a little bit.
If you had, say, 5 blind men around it, they might describe it differently based on which part of the elephant they were touching.
Yeah, yeah. And it would be gross.
But it would be like a parable. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, it'd be a single bull. There's really only one story being told. It's not two. It's not a pair of bulls.
Yeah. So we actually have to apologize for the elephant.
Yeah.
But
sorry.
Then also.
Sorry about that.
For something elephant. Else as well.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Sometimes in life, something's here today, and then you have to pay for it tomorrow.
I mean, that's one of my mottos.
Yeah.
I live by that.
So that happened to us.
That happened to Wimpy, too, and Popeye. Hamburger today.
Yeah.
Pay for it.
Well,
that was Tuesday.
He claimed that he was going to pay for it on Tuesday.
Yeah, we never saw that.
I don't know that we ever saw him pay for anything.
Yeah, I don't know if he had any money.
I assume he didn't because he was in a lot of debt.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know. It depends on whether people took him up on his offer.
Maybe... Popeye was like had a lot more subtlety to it than I'm aware of. Maybe it was like actually this insightful like commentary on the lower class, you know, because he was like a sailor and he had to eat stuff out of cans all the time.
Well, I mean, everybody was eating stuff out of cans all the time. It was the Depression.
That's true.
I assume it started in the Depression.
I don't know for sure. I have no idea. I know Robin Williams played him one time
in the Depression.
It was during the Depression? It wasn't that. He would have been pretty young if he were even alive. Was Robin Williams like 80 years old? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think probably.
Huh.
I think he was close.
If only we had a way of confirming that.
Nah, there's no one that knows this answer.
It's true. Actors are notorious for not telling you when they were born, how old they are.
Yeah.
So for all we know, he could have been hundreds of years old.
He was a genie.
That's true. He did play a genie.
Genie, I set you free.
Yeah, so here today, pay tomorrow, much like the streaming game.
Yeah, you know, in the streaming game, You roll some dice, and sometimes you come up with a paid video.
We thought we had a great idea. We thought
it's a great idea.
Two different movies, same name.
Brilliant.
Probably close to the same plot.
Oh my gosh.
Made completely, what, 30 years apart from each other? 40 years apart from each other?
30 exactly, maybe.
Okay. And nothing better. One's on one service. Actually, one was on both. And then one's on the other service.
Yeah.
We cover both of our bases. People can say, here's the original. You were going to watch the original first and then watch the remake second. And I was going to watch the remake first and then the originals.
Had a whole plan.
And just all of a sudden they decide, you know what? So many people, i.e. two, have decided to watch the old one. We got to make people pay for that.
We're just going to rip it right off of the streaming service.
So we had originally intended to cover the original Italian Job with Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
That's uncanny.
Yeah, I think so.
And literally days.
I'm Michael Caine. I'm in a movie.
Where did Dean go?
Is he right here?
Yeah. There he is. And they pull it down literally like a day before we're going to record.
I actually watched 3/4 of it.
Did it say you had to pay the remainder when you tried to watch it again? So
it's the $3 rental. It didn't have the little flag on it.
Mm.
So
we had to find a suitable replacement or a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And we chose The Getaway, starring the King of Cool, Steve McQueen. So
I'm Steve McQueen.
So in this episode, Michael Caine will be played by Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. You should keep those impressions coming. Yeah. That's
shoot them up.
That's spot
punch
on.
It.
So let's talk about The Italian Job first.
The new one or the old one?
Remember, we couldn't watch the old one. So let's watch the new one with all Mark right. Wahlberg.
If I can make a brief recommendation, though.
Okay.
To based on the 3/4 of the old one that I did get through.
Sure.
Don't watch it.
Skip it.
Because it's boring.
Don't pay that $2.99 rental.
No, I was even gonna record a little sound clip to play here,
mm-hmm.
Which was just gonna sound basically like this: burp, 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 crash, burp, burp. Those are horns. Those are car horns.
Oh, okay.
That's like 90%
I thought it was like a bad musical score or something. Okay, I see. Yeah, interesting. There's some quote from that movie that people, when they do Michael Caine impressions, where he's like, you were supposed to blow the bloody doors off or something that.
I saw that scene.
Yeah, so that's one you hear mm-hmm. actually in the...
You were supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Oh, my God. I mean, why do I have to watch the movie? It's like I'm watching it right now.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty good.
It's great, I have to say. And it sounds nothing like your Mark Wahlberg.
No, my Mark Wahlberg is It's a little less whiny.
It's got kind of like a Boston twang to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you're supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
It's great.
I'm Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, I liked how you added that part at the end there, so I knew who it was.
Yep.
I wouldn't have needed it, because I could tell right away.
Right.
But
right.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, so we did watch the new one.
We did, and it came out...
2003.
Yeah, so it's on its 12-year anniversary.
Oh, man.
Pretty big anniversary.
It's been a quick 12 years.
It has indeed.
Did you watch this in 2003 or thereabouts?
I didn't. It had sort of average reviews at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've mentioned before, I'm not usually big on these types of movies. So it wouldn't have been something that would have even really appeared on my radar.
Yeah, I watched it on video at some point around that time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Most
deaf.
Yeah, most deaf indeed.
He's in it.
Yeah. I'm most deaf.
That's pretty good too. I mean, you're killing it. We should just have a separate podcast that's entirely your impressions.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just be you.
Yeah.
No one would know. They'd think, there's 10 people behind the mic. And it's
right,
just you.
Exactly. I'm Michael Caine. I'm most deaf. I'm Mark Wahlberg. I don't remember how I did that one earlier.
Oh, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
It sounded less like him that time. Not that much less like him.
Mark Wahlberg.
That was closer.
That was closer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got the Boston in it.
Yep. Yeah. So I don't know. Having watched it once before and thinking that it was okay, I was sort of looking forward to this.
Yeah. What did you, how did it hold up?
Did not hold up as it turned out. Mm.
I didn't see it originally, but I imagine it wouldn't have held up.
Yeah.
Because I think it would have been in a different mental state.
Yep.
At the time you saw that and you'd be like, oh, cool. Car chases, pretty women.
Yeah. Well, and I wasn't crazy about, like, you know, the Gone in 60 Seconds sort of genre of film either. But I remember thinking that this one was a little bit different, a little bit more interesting. I don't know. I was mistaken.
Yeah.
This one is exactly the same as all of them.
So and formulaic.
Yeah, exactly. What is going on? I'm hearing some, so your heat being attacked by a monster?
I don't hear anything.
I hear clang, clang, clang,
shut
clang,
up.
Clang.
Shut up.
Clang, clang,
shut up
clang.
In there.
I don't hear anything.
All right. For the listener, there was some clanging going on. Mm-hmm. You probably couldn't hear it on the mics.
I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway. Yeah, very formulaic. I mean, it's fast paced. It keeps going.
I guess.
I mean, here's it's a classic story. Thieves steal some stuff.
Right.
Then one thief steals from the thieves.
Right.
Tries to kill the thieves. Then those thieves try to come back and thief from the thieves. And then
I mean, I think you
roll
put,
credits.
You put it real succinctly right yeah. there. Is a classic, I trained you for this from birth sort of thing. And then now you have to do it for me.
Yeah.
So Charlize Theron.
Yeah. She was her father, Kiefer yep. Sutherland, which I never knew that was her father.
Yeah. She, yeah.
Yeah.
Her cousin is. No, it's her father's Donald Sutherland.
Oh, right, right. I'm sorry.
Her cousin
is Kiefer. But yeah. He's not in the movie. I felt like Mark Wahlberg kind of was replacing him in this.
A little
you know?
Bit.
I was like...
But they couldn't be related in order for them to like get together at the end.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, because they kept talking about him. Oh, right. Yeah, I guess I forgot about that part, the romantic part of
yeah.
it. Yeah. That had been a little bit weird. That had been sort of art housey.
Yeah.
I don't think they were going
I think
for that.
Kiefer was still riding that... that Disney's Three Musketeers high at this point. I mean, it had only been 10 years since Disney's Three Musketeers.
And so. We know anything Disney related has a long shelf life.
So long.
Mm-hmm.
So long.
Yeah. Let's talk about my favorite part of this movie, which is, well, there's a lot of good things, but my favorite part of this movie is Seth Green's performance. Can we...
You know what? Here's the thing. As soon as I saw his name in the credits, I went, ugh.
Yeah. Well, Seth Green, Mos Def... And I guess an early performance for Jason Statham.
Jason Statham, yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He makes sense in this movie. The other two, it's like Ludacris and, who's it, Taye Diggs, who are in the Fast Five movies. It's the equivalent of that. It's like...
I've never seen any of those movies.
Well, it's just taking people who are not actors and putting them in acting roles.
Okay.
You know, so... Seth Green obviously is an actor.
Yep.
Now is probably more famous for being sort of producer and creator of Robot
actor.
Chicken. Yeah. But not, he's kind of a bit actor, like not yeah. what you'd expect in an action movie.
And he was in everything at this time.
That's true. That is true. Career. Yeah. You have to remember that this was the era of Austin Powers.
Yep.
And all of that. And he started out in some of those teeny movies, like Can't Hardly Wait. And,
yep.
So this was the peak of his acting prowess at this point.
I will say I didn't hate him.
No.
I thought they used him well. They used him as sort of this
Napster. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. As sort of this like this guy with a little chip on his shoulder who like they kind of tolerate because he does things that nobody else can figure out how to do.
You need to have him around because he knows the computers and such.
He's the adorable sidekick.
Right. Yeah. I was looking at him doing this stuff, and I was like, "Wow, I can't understand what his computer is doing." But then he would do a really good job of explaining it, which you know I appreciated.
I think we have a clip.
Yeah.
All right.
We set?
Yeah. I've enhanced the viewing matrix to track both the Cartesian coordinates and three altitude angles, the yaw, pitch, and roll, to give us the exact position and orientation of our baby.
I mean,
I know exactly what he's talking. He adjusted the Cartesian angles.
Yeah, exactly. He had the pitch and yaw in there and everything.
Yeah.
So it made complete sense after that.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe that in 2003 there was technology available to
completely 3D map an entire building.
Mm-hmm. Based on what I don't know, like
Cartesian coordinates,
yeah,
three altitude angles,
right?
yep, yaw, pitch, and roll, or whatever. I don't know if he was flying a helicopter or if he was actually, yeah. And my favorite part about his whole hacking, when they're hacking like the traffic system,
he's just guessing passwords.
Well, that's true too. My favorite is that to do the last part, the rest of the time he did it from the safety of a boat in that case, or a warehouse.
Right.
He has to get his modem and his computer, put it on a luggage cart, and sit on a luggage carousel at the airport to run it. Like, so that he could be out among the people too while they're out racing Mini Coopers. You know, this was actually basically an extended Mini Cooper commercial.
Absolutely.
I don't know how much Mini paid. I know that the original movie had Minis in it.
Right, exactly.
But I bet Mini paid a fortune to subsidize this movie.
Yeah. I don't know. So it's hard for me because I did watch most of the original one. So I do want to make a few comments on things they pulled.
Go for it. It's even better when people haven't seen it.
Yeah. So all the names are not all the names. A few of the names are names of characters from the original.
They kept some of the originals.
Mark Wahlberg's character has the same name as Michael Caine's, and the John Bridger character, the Donald Sutherland character, is the same name as one of the guys in the other one. And they make a there's a nice little nod aside from the Mini Coopers and the fact that they're stealing gold.
Yeah,
that's all the same.
Yep,
it's a completely different plot, but and a completely different heist, but. But they make a nice nod to the original when they first sneak up on they're surveilling Edward Norton's house, and he sits down in front of his television. He turns on the television, and if you go back and rewind it, it's Michael Caine from from the first movie, which I thought was a nice little thing right there.
I mean. All the more we could have had such a much richer discussion had we been able to actually
it's true.
Cover both films.
It's
but
true.
Alas,
well, whatever.
It can't be.
I think this movie starts out really strong.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the opening scenes.
Yeah.
Get you right in the action. And you know what? Here's what I feel about these movies. Heist movies like this belong in Europe.
Oh, yeah. It just seems... There's a lot more interest. You know, the streets are harder to navigate.
Yeah.
Everything's more foreign. You could believe that there would just be a safe full of gold sitting in some building with a bunch of armed guys.
Right, because it's been there for 500 years.
Right, exactly.
Or whatever. Yeah, they belong in Europe. And the terrain is so, like, vastly different but drivable. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you can get to the Alps.
Yeah.
You know, you can get to Switzerland or whatever.
Right.
You know, I like that. And I really liked seeing them take that, you know, take that journey and then, you know, end up in the Alps or wherever they were.
Yeah.
And that was about as far as my interest in the movie went.
I agree. I was not, you can see everything coming, right? You know, the foreshadowing of find a girl.
Sure.
Who, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I mean, that is foreshadowing. Like, yeah. I don't know. I have.
But you see the poster for this movie and you go, Mark Wahlberg, Charlize Theron, they're going to get together in this movie. You don't even have to see the movie to know that's going to happen.
I will say they didn't really get together until after the movie ended, which I was a little bit surprised by.
I was kind of hoping that they would just wouldn't.
Yeah.
And they would actually just kind of leave it hanging in the air.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so here's another thing.
No, go ahead.
Who is the mastermind, Mark Wahlberg or Donald Sutherland? Because he, in the beginning, talks about how he's been with him on every heist.
Right.
And he's perfectly planned everything. And once he's gone, he pulls off arguably a much more impressive heist than they did the first time. I mean, they make a truck disappear into a subway. You know,
but I mean, it's all the
it's the
a
same
matter of
process,
scale, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously. But yeah.
Because this is, I always have this, well, there's a couple problems that I have with heist movies in general, in that they always require lots of people to pull off, but it's always like there's one person who's the brains or whatever.
Sure.
And
well,
and,
I mean, that's been my experience on all heists.
But of course, yeah. I mean, you're the brains.
Right.
Clearly of this operation. I mean, I just follow your lead.
That's what I've heard.
So the, and the other thing is that they always get key things. Like, they're so smart and they figure everything out. But they always have these huge, and we'll get to this in the getaway. I don't know what you'd call it. Not mistakes, but just like big blind spots where they're just like, oh, I didn't do this thing that I should have done or checked into this thing that I shouldn't have checked into. And that's hard for me to, if they're so intelligent that they can plan every single thing that's going to happen, how do they not see that one angle?
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah. And we shouldn't be expected to see it necessarily as an audience, so it's still a surprise to us. But you're right. It's like, oh, but you didn't check it? Like, you know how this goes.
Yeah, exactly. And it's usually something that's cliched. It's something that even me as a non-bank heist artist would go, that's probably something I should look out for.
Yeah.
But anyway, whatever. It's fine.
Can we talk about Edward Norton's mustache?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was going to say, the beginning of the film, when it actually, when they show you the people, and they do a good job, I think, of, with the exception of that little bit we played for Seth Green, just kind of letting you know what each person's job is without really having to, like, beat you over the head with it.
Right.
You can kind of just tell, okay, this guy's the guy that's a driver, that guy's, like, the computer guy, this guy is the explosives guy or whatever. And then Edward Norton, he has the mustache and the goatee, so you know he's the bad guy.
Right?
like, if you're in a group of people and one of them has a goatee, mm-hmm. watch that guy, because he's going to double-cross you at some point.
Edward Norton...
This assumes you don't all have goatees, because you could all just be evil. But
as a person, Edward Norton is a movie star, and I think giving him that weird little mustache at the beginning of the film, because it's different at the beginning than it is through the rest of the film. Giving him that weird little mustache at the beginning of the film somehow makes him look like sort of dowdy.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
That's impressive to me. That choice, because he looks stupid.
He does.
In the mustache.
He does.
Why would he have that? But it makes you, like, aside from, like, the structure of like, what everyone does or whatever, it makes you not really question him, because he looks just like,
that's
kind of like, I'm just part of the team.
He's playing the long con the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. But then he grows the mustache out and adds the little goatee thing.
Yeah.
And then he looks like a moron.
I know.
Charlize Theron would never go out with him.
Right. Exactly. And he should know, when looking at himself in the mirror with that mustache, no woman will go out.
Yeah.
Like, no attractive woman. Charlize Theron, you know, being one of the most attractive women in the world,
right.
arguably, would, you know, and also she works as a cable person. I don't think so. Anyway,
yeah.
But that's fine.
Yeah.
I get how movies work. I can complain about it all I want. They're always going to have these elements to them.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone in them is always going to be better looking. Even, like, the worst looking actor is better looking than the average person. So you always have to deal with that as well. But yeah, this was one of the, I was actually kind of surprised by. I've always thought Mark Wahlberg has aged really well, and he has.
He has.
But he, like, got really yoked after a while. He's, like, really big now. And I was, like, taken aback by how small he seemed in this movie.
Yeah, you forget that he used to be a little bit skinnier.
A
little bit, like...
Well, he's not a tall dude either.
No.
And it's weird to see him next to Charlize Theron. Like, you're kind of like, wow, she's like a goddess. And this dude...
Yeah, well, she's like 6'9" or something.
Yeah, that's true. She is really tall. It just was odd because, like, you know, if that were Tom Cruise, they'd put him up on a box or something
right.
so that they would seem like of similar stature. But you see them just, like, walking along, and she's a half a foot taller than him.
Right.
All of a sudden, he sort of loses a little bit of that, like, impressiveness as a movie star.
Sure.
You know? Not that he isn't impressive.
Yeah. I actually kind of dig that. I dig that they, like, weren't afraid to put the two of them together like that. Because, I mean, I don't know. You're taller than I am. You're what, like 6'6", 6'1"?
Like 6'3".
Okay.
Yeah.
Really? That tall? Wow. Yeah. I'm under 6 foot.
That's what they tell me at the DMV. I don't know. I don't.
You just go by whatever they. Yeah. You look about 6'3". Okay. Yeah. All right. Put it on the license. I'm just slightly under 6 foot, and I've never been intimidated by like women who are taller than I am. Mm-hmm.
What about
and
more broad
shoulders? I don't understand that. It depends on what they're using their shoulders for.
Yeah.
Like if they're running at me in like a football game,
yeah,
then yeah, I'm terrified.
Okay.
If they're just like walking down the street,
I just want to know the parameters here.
Yeah, exactly. So. So I kind of like, I don't know. I know that in traditional, you know, male female roles, that is somewhat emasculating for some people, but I've never seen it that way. And if you put Charlize Theron in front of you,
yeah, like, sure.
Who cares?
Exactly. Right?
So I kind of dig that they just went with it. That monster is back.
Shut up.
No dinner for him. I mean, I yeah. Anyway. I don't have much more to say on this one. I it's not a bad movie. If you have nothing to do and it's on like TBS, just watch it.
It's long.
Yeah. It's
only an hour 45.
Yeah, but it feels longer.
It feels a lot longer.
Yeah. And there's so many people in it, and you're like, well... That's one thing I like about watching movies that happened like 10 years ago is going like, oh, all of these people were in that.
Right. You see Oscar from The Office.
Mm-hmm.
You see Pete from 30 Rock.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't even notice that. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. But I just... I don't know. Why is this in L.A.? Who cares?
Is there... I'm not from L.A., and I've never really, like, tried to travel in L.A. Is there a subway in Los Angeles?
I think so.
There is? Okay.
I think so.
Because the whole time I was going, like, I didn't know there was a subway under Man's Chinese Theater.
Yeah, like, I think it's, like, I think there's, like, a small...
Does anybody ride it?
I don't know.
Because my sister lived out there, and I never once took it anywhere.
I don't know. Well, everybody drives out there, so I don't really know.
It's so spread out. There's no point in having a subway, but maybe. Yeah. I don't know. And so why is it set in L.A.? And also...
Yeah, it's not really an Italian job. I mean, it is because the
It's like a reference job, back to the Italian job.
Yeah, right? The initial job is Italian, but in the original movie, the whole job is in Turin, Italy.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I did appreciate that they respected the fact that you don't often see this actually happen in movies that involve gold bars, but gold bars are really
heavy, right? Yeah.
And you'll see like in movies when they'll just take one out of a safe and chuck it to somebody.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you wouldn't do that. You're not going
to, they had the little slide that they built for it. Yeah.
So they were at least appreciating, and then they moved it underwater, which is, you know, helps too when they're moving them originally. I don't know. And it's hard. I'm glad to hear someone else's perspective on this because I usually just don't like these movies.
Yeah.
They're so implausible a lot of the time. And like, and we can talk about this with the next movie, but I'm never sure who I'm supposed to be rooting for in these situations because they're all crooks. You know?
Right. Well, yeah. Here's what this movie was missing. It was kind of cool, but so if you want to contrast it with like Ocean's 11, like
yeah,
the newer one,
yeah,
right, which is probably the reason that this movie got remade because the newer Ocean's 11 had just come out like fairly close to this, and it was a big hit.
And movies come in waves like that where you get a lot of heist movies in a row.
Exactly. Yeah. The thing that works about that movie is A, it's a little bit cooler, and B, it's a lot more fun.
It's like trying to be cool and fun.
Yeah, exactly. This one was like, well, we'll sprinkle in a little cool and funness, but mostly it's like we're serious about this heist.
Let's make it sentimental.
Yeah, and that loses me.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, if you want to watch it, go for it. But I would say we're both not necessarily recommending that you do so.
Yeah, it's not a huge waste of your time, but it's not a good use of it.
Yeah. If you're a connoisseur of heist movies, maybe do it just to add it to the collection.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if you do decide to plunk down your $3.99 to rent it, rent the original, you know, let us know. Go to the blog or iTunes or whatever.
Absolutely.
Let us know what you thought about that.
Yeah, and how it contrasts. That would be very interesting to me because I didn't get a chance to watch it before they pulled it down.
It's really unfortunate.
Well, not that unfortunate.
No, it's not.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the other one, which was a late entry, mm-hmm. a late substitution.
Yep.
The Getaway, 1972. Steve McQueen, directed and written by Sam.
Yep. Steve McQueen.
Directed and adapted to the screen by Sam Peckinpah, also known for Straw Dogs, which was another movie that was
recently remade.
Mm-hmm. Steve McQueen, Heart of Gold. They're actually kind of similar in a lot of ways in this, you know.
It's another heist.
Yeah, he's heisting some stuff, some money from a small bank.
He's boosting it.
Boosting it with some guys he doesn't trust because this guy got him out of prison and wants him to pull this job for him.
Yep.
And hijinks ensue.
Well, yeah. I don't know. You know what? This movie to me represents a lot that is wrong with 70s masculinity.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I was actually going to say that I've seen Straw Dogs as well.
Okay.
And
I think this is the only Peckinpah movie I've seen.
Okay. So. He made a bunch of these movies, like in a whatever span. Those two films have such a poor view of women and poor female characters that I couldn't tell if it's him and he just hates women. Or if it's like that was just the era and that's the way that, I mean, you have like Taxi Driver, which kind of has like, women are usually like just objects in these movies. Or in this case, just like completely mistreated, like treated as stupid, treated as, lazy or as cheating or whatever.
Right.
That it's hard for me to look at a movie like this and go, why was this movie was really popular when it came out.
Yeah.
It made a lot of, it was actually one of the most lucrative movies for either McQueen or this guy, Peckinpah. And, you know, that's saying something about the era, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. There's a moment where he gets so upset with the woman, Ally McGraw,
mm-hmm.
is the actress's name. He gets so upset with her that he slaps her a little bit.
Yeah.
And, He doesn't like close fist.
Yeah, sure.
Punch her.
Just slap her on the side of the highway.
Yeah, exactly. Against the car. He roughs her up a little bit.
Yeah.
And like on the one hand, I was going, because she's a part of this heist. She's an accomplice. Yeah. She's as much a part of it as anybody else. If it happened to be a man,
mm-hmm.
like I would go, oh yeah, of course he would rough him up.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it works.
True.
But I was so like appalled because it was a woman.
And also it's his wife too.
And it is his wife. Yeah.
It's not just some woman.
Yeah.
It's
she's a good, like he's got a good 70, 80, 90 pounds on her.
Yeah.
You know,
it's true. And he's mad at her in that circumstance for something that's kind of her fault, but he's mad at her in general for at doing what he asked her to do.
Yeah.
He asked her to do anything by any means necessary to get him out.
Yep.
And she got him out of prison, and then he gets upset with her because she used her feminine wiles to get the, you know, and it's like, what else does she have? She doesn't have money. She doesn't, you know.
What did he expect
from her?
Exactly.
I know,
like, as soon as she walked into the guy's office, the guy who sits on the parole board, who they're going to do the job for, you know, I mean, and she was wearing like very... Yeah. You know,
revealing clothing.
Mm-hmm. Like you were like, oh yeah, that's what she's going to do to get him out of prison.
Right.
It's like
this. It's so funny that so there was actually, there was a prison escape recently. This is true. This isn't from that I heard about, where 28 prisoners somewhere in Mexico were, escaped because three of their girlfriends came and, promised an orgy to the guards, like lured them in, tied them up, and then let all their boyfriends out of
so
this is still being used today by, you know, I mean, it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, you use whatever resources you have at hand.
Yeah.
And if it happens to be your hands, you use those,
I guess. Yeah. That's a nice turn of phrase.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I mean, you have, so she's obviously one of the main female characters. Then you have Sally Struthers. Hard name to say five times fast.
Yeah.
As the veterinarian's wife, Fran. This is the weirdest, like the whole side story with her. So for those of you who haven't seen the film.
I think this is even more appalling than than the Ally McGraw character, because at least she like had something invested in it. She had like a job to do and she did it.
Yeah.
The Sally Struthers character is precisely like, I think, what these male screenwriters were thinking.
Yeah.
You know,
she's married to this veterinarian and
played by Floyd, the barber, from the Andy Griffith Show.
I would have never caught that, but I'm glad that you have the soul of a 50-year-old man and have seen all of.
He's great in that show.
Yeah, he stitches up this other guy who was on the heist with him and
who
double crossed him, and he left for dead. He subsequently takes both of them. You know, forces them to drive him to this hotel, which is a safe house for criminals that he knows that Steve McQueen's character is going to go to. And through the course of this, very, very quickly, this period of events happens where she becomes completely enamored and flirtatious with the criminal Rudy, mm-hmm. is his name, and regularly flirts with and, you know, eventually has sex with this criminal in front of her husband, who subsequently hangs himself in the bathroom, and then they just kind of laugh it off.
Right, because he's like not a man.
Exactly.
Basically, is what this little relationship. Now, it's hard to say, right? Because this is a bad guy.
Sure.
So you can say that they were going for, well, this is what bad guys are, but I don't know. I feel like these are two sides.
But she's not
of masculinity, and
oh, absolutely.
Floyd the barber is on the wrong side,
absolutely.
And so things don't turn out well for him.
And it's the same thing with That guy had a lot of professions. He was a barber, then he was a veterinarian.
It's crazy. Yeah, they bring him in as a specialist. Only two things I've ever seen him in.
Well, they're just like, hey, we need a guy who's good at one thing and to play this part. Oh, right. We got the guy for you.
Yeah.
No, but that's
incidentally, he's a bachelor all throughout the Andy Griffith Show.
Well, so. We know why. He didn't choose correctly. He had poor choice with women.
Right.
This is Straw Dogs too. Like that side story is like the veterinarian, the barber, he's Dustin Hoffman's character in the first half of Straw Dogs.
Oh, really?
Because Straw Dogs is about this nebbish guy, mm-hmm. who gets a super hot woman, mm-hmm. moves back with her to her hometown, and then gets like physically and emotionally harassed by these alpha males who are like, it's like her ex-boyfriend. And eventually Dustin Hoffman becomes a real man and like fights them and kills them, right? So that's what Straw Dogs is. And there again, the woman is like this thing to be like this object, and she's not really like a fleshed out character,
right?
Doesn't think for herself, like, you know, and like, it's two sides of like, are you going to be a dweeb or are you going to be, you know, Rudy?
Yeah.
You know? And I don't really know how that's, as a modern male, I don't know how that's appealing to anyone.
Yeah,
how anybody watches that and goes, ha, he's slapping her with some ribs. That's hilarious.
Right. There's something to be said for like the Steve McQueen, you know, sort of appeal, like, sure. like quiet, calm, flat out cool.
Yeah.
And I understand how that is still appealing, you know, as a masculine, yeah. Sort of archetype.
Right.
And I get that, but you're absolutely right. Like the terrible treatment of other people,
yeah.
Not just women, but other people in general. Sure. And like this idea that you have to be violent in order to be
a real man,
It's just, I just don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was going to, and this calls back to what we were talking about before, is that, you know, Steve McQueen is the Mark Wahlberg of this story. He's the head honcho of the brains.
Yep.
Can we just stop writing in these moments where they just make these harebrained decisions? He makes two of them in this movie, both involving Rudy, where first time he shoots Rudy, he shoots him after having given him a bulletproof vest.
But Rudy said he wasn't going to wear it.
He said he wasn't going to wear it so that other dude didn't wear it, but he still, or the other guy took it but didn't wear it or whatever, so he took that guy's suit and he wore it. He shoots him a bunch of times. You don't see the bad blood effects come out of his shirt, so he's probably still alive.
Right.
He shoots him again, trying to hit him in the head, and he sees some blood, and so he's like, oh, that's probably good. and then he just decides to take off. Like, I've never been in this situation before, and I'm not a cold-blooded killer, but I feel like if I were in his situation, I'd have, like, gone up and taken his pulse.
Yeah.
I'd have shot him in the head.
Right.
Like, I would have just made sure he did not get back up, but no, he gets back up. And then what does he do later? He gets the upper hand on him in the hotel when Rudy's coming after him. He catches him off guard, knocks him out. He's like, I'm going to kill him. Oh, no, I'm not going to kill him. I'll just take his gun, take the bullets out, and throw them in different corners of the room right. So that, you know, when he wakes up, he won't be able to figure out what I did with the bullets. I'm sure he won't see them scattered all over the floor.
I know. I was trying to figure out why he didn't kill him the second time.
I think it was... That was the screenwriter's going, well, we don't want him to look like a bad
right.
guy.
He can't be that bad. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And that's... You know, that's true with, like Straw Dogs. If you watch Straw Dogs, at some point you go, like, I don't know if Dustin Hoffman's the good guy in this story anymore.
Yeah.
Because he's just, like, maiming people left and right. Mm-hmm. And you're going, other than just see this other guy, like, kind of bully him and stuff, I'm not really sure that it warrants this level. And so I think screenwriters sometimes, when they have a good guy and a bad guy, and they're both doing bad things, like shooting people and doing things.
They make a distinction somehow.
They have to find some way of getting the audience back on board. Like,
yeah.
If you just watch, you know, Keanu Reeves shoot 8 guys, you got to watch him, you know, hold his fire when one of the guys grabs an innocent bystander
right.
or something. You know, you have to add that in there, or else you start going, okay, well, I don't know if I'm on this guy's, you know, side anymore. And I found that hard to do in this situation, actually, that, like, him pulling back was not enough, because I don't know, I just wasn't sympathetic to Steve McQueen, like, through the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be I know I'm supposed to be rooting for this guy, but I just, and maybe it's because it was a different time, and mm-hmm. they had different ideas of what a hero was, you know, and that's why I'm, as a person sitting here in 2015 watching it, I'm going, yeah,
well,
you know,
this is kind of like the birth of the anti-hero, this period in movie history, right?
Yeah.
I think these are some of the first films where you see that, where you
yep.
see like them like succeeding through gratuitous violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I did like about this film?
Okay.
Was the beginning, because they showed what real mental distress him failing to get his parole put him through.
Mm-hmm.
And even the fact that, like, when he does get out and his wife goes and picks him up, and he's like, I just want to go to a park and just walk around. So mm-hmm. they just, like, the fact that it takes them a little while to, like, see each other as people again,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then, like, even their sex scene was mm-hmm. like, was, he was like, I don't know. It's been a long time. I don't know if I can do this, you know, mm-hmm. right now. I thought that was really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they really, like, got into him emotionally mm-hmm. without cracking that sort of veneer of coolness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This actually, I agree. I like the beginning of it. It kind of reminded me, I guess because it's set in Texas and there's hotels involved and things, it reminded me, at least stylistically in some points, like of No Country for Old Men,
mm-hmm.
where, like, you know, you have a similar, where you have kind of two similar,
yeah.
like, stories
actually,
going on.
Actually, it's really similar.
One guy's
yeah.
chasing the other guy. They end up at this hotel, you know.
There's
obviously,
a lot of long driving.
There's a lot of,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's Texas.
Yeah, of course. But I was thinking about that. I was wondering how much this might have influenced that. You know, when either Cormac McCarthy was writing that, or when the Coen brothers were adapting it to the screen, or whatever.
Right. It's a really good point. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I don't know. I want to go back actually and watch maybe a couple more of his movies and a couple movies from that time period to kind of be able to suss out the differences. Like,
mm-hmm.
I just have a theory that it was a lot of his movies were maybe on the high end of that. Maybe every movie at that time was kind of above average in terms of this sort of misogynistic, like, male prototype or whatever, but I want to know if he just in general was much more on board with that portrayal.
Peckinpah, you mean?
Yeah, because a lot of not Steve McQueen, because I mean he was the cool action hero guy in a lot
right.
of movies. I don't know that he was slapping women around in a lot of them, or
yeah.
you know,
he did not in The Great Escape.
Yeah,
but there were no women. So
there was a lot of bikes jumping things in that. Wasn't that the one where they jumped the...
Yeah, it was just him. Just one bike. Oh, he jumped the thing. Okay. Supposedly, he did the stunt himself.
That's cool. I fully appreciate movies where the guy does his own stunts.
Yeah.
And not because it's impressive, but just because it...
You can tell. I would let a guy do a stunt for me.
Yeah.
If I were the actor.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Well, you can just tell that it's... You can tell whether or not it's a... They have to do a lot more different like cutaways. And you don't get to see the guy's face and stuff. Like Tom Cruise, for whatever reason, does a lot of his own stunts. Mm-hmm. And so I think that actually makes his scenes a little more compelling because you're like, oh, that's Tom Cruise jumping out of that building.
Sure.
Or like rolling down the side of that thing.
Yeah, because you're always going to be in the movie. You're always going to
have to cut back.
You as the viewer are always going to know that it's a movie.
Yeah.
You know, and you know that there are going to be tricks.
Yeah.
And if you know in the back of your mind that that's actually the guy doing it, that or girl,
yeah.
That's woman. Then that's a little bit of extra.
Yeah, exactly. You see, yeah, and you want to see their facial expressions and stuff too when that stuff's happening. And you can't if it's going to be cut away and you see the back of the head because it's a stunt double,
right?
So true. Yeah,
yeah. So overall,
yeah, I'm not. Yeah. Not Steve McQueen's best movie.
It's also... this was a long one, too. This was 2 hours and, I think, 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just... It kept dragging on and on and on. And I really didn't know where they were going. I did appreciate that they didn't spell everything out for us.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't like, here's what we got to do. Here's how we're going to do it. And here's the montage of us preparing for it. And then here's the thing. You know, I don't know. I liked that, but I don't know. It was ugh.
Little cameo by Slim Pickens there at the end.
Yeah, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Liked it. Yeah, he made out all right.
Yeah, put a cap on the end of that.
Yeah,
yeah. Again, good to get some validation from someone else because I was not.
It's not my movie.
Wasn't into it.
And I think you're right. I think this isn't my genre either. Mm-hmm. I thought that all heist movies were going to be Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
They're not. And I'm not like a huge fan of that movie. It's just like that's an example of doing this well.
Exactly. Or at least a movie where you kind of are on board with the people a little bit more. I don't know. It's just, again.
Just because they're at least charming or something.
Yeah, exactly. There has to be something about them. Like, it's really hard. Cause it's really hard for me. And I don't know that I'm that literal about like crime and stuff. But I just always go, this person's a criminal. And they're like ripping off. Like, they're committing a crime. So by committing a crime, you have to like give me something.
Yeah.
They're robbing this because they need the money for something.
Yeah.
They're at the end of their rope, or you know, like they did it a little bit here because you at least in this circumstance.
This is his last job, right?
He's just doing it to get out and
right.
And
that was his penance for released.
That's their way of doing that's a screenwriter trick in this situation. Yeah. The last job. Is always the one that goes wrong in these stories, and it's always everyone that I've seen, it's always kind of like they're bringing me back in. I just watched a movie, John Wick, which is basically kind of like they pulled him back in.
He'd gotten
out. Yeah, it's a Yankee Candle heist.
Okay,
so it's the biggest shipment ever,
mm-hmm.
and. He just really has an affinity for not only the natural light that comes from them, but just the nice fragrance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they're really valuable candles, and there's a huge black market for them.
And he swore he'd stop, you know, but like any junkie, he's got to go right back
to
it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He smelled the vanilla and just couldn't get it out of his nose.
Yeah. And I was not expecting all the Glade... product placement throughout, but
oh, that is surprising.
You can't watch that one on streaming, so you'll just have to take my word for it that that's what actually happens.
Yeah, I believe you.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I think that's
kind of a bummer
ho hum
of an episode.
Harumph.
Yeah,
but we got a better one coming up next week.
Boy, do we
got some Tom Hardy love coming.
Only 7 days you have to wait.
7 days, and then you will get. Two more movies that might be good.
Get a pair of them.
Yep. As always, two.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. If you want to chime in yourself.
loud.
I know.
So loud.
Take it easy there, Tim. Check us out on the internet at primeflixpod.com, where you can leave us some feedback and you can give us some idea for future episodes or hear past episodes. So until next week, 7 days from now, I've been Ed.
And I'm always Dean.
We'll see you on the internet.
Michael Caine.
I wasn't expecting him to be on the episode today.